Okay. Paper 114. We're in section 6. We stopped in the middle of the section with this the second six divisions of angels. It's the old single column, yeah, top of the page 1256. And let me just give a 2 minute reminder of what those first six were, that we know where we're jumping in.
Did we get the sixth one?
Yep, we did the sixth one right at the very end. So remember, we have these master seraphim, these seraphim graduates that are fully integrous seraphim that are in charge of 12 divisions of human over control. And we went through the first six. So the first one, the epical angels. Remember those? Those are the angels that are concerned with making sure that a given social generation fits into the flow of this dispensation. So they're concerned with now very much. Then there's the progress angels that are obviously concerned directly with making it go forward into the future of this dispensation. And most specifically, we have such a strong tendency to develop conventions and then to apply loyalty and zeal to those conventions and really get isms established that we set in stone. And so definitely one of the things that the progress angels are working actively on is trying to free us from the stasis that isms eventually set themselves into. They get very concretized. They're definitely challenging our tendency to form immutable isms. Then the religious guardians, or the angels of the churches, they're making sure that what's coming from the past is not lost, so that the three together are present, future, past. And in particular, they're the conservation angels, looking to the conservation of moral values. So that as the progress angels work on evolving the forms, we don't lose what we need to pour into those forms. It doesn't do you any good to progress forward to new forms if you have no values to pour into them. And so, like I said, they're the checkmates of the angels of progress. They make sure that we don't evolve so fast that values slip through our fingers. And then, of course, the angels of nation life, angels of the trumpets. They're the group, like we said last week, that work very directly with the Most High Observer in that role of over-controller of political evolution. And then the angels of the races, they're again conservation angels, like religious guardians. Now here, they're concerned with the conservation of the potentials that are in the races. In the case of this planet, very exceptionally, 9 different races, all with distinct potentials, potential values, you need to conserve that potential value, just like the religious guardians are worried about conserving the actualized values. And then the sixth one, the angels of the future, like we read right at the end there, are really looking towards the next dispensation Now you have these, those first three that are really spanning the full breadth of this dispensation. Then you have those angels of the future looking at what needs to be done in this dispensation to prepare for the next dispensation. And all of those, like we'll read as we go forward tonight, have destiny reservists attached to them, all six of those, and then the six that we'll start with tonight. And since we, it just happened to break this way, that we split this section in half, and so that this now is going to be right in the moment tied so closely to the reservists, let's really do that kind of in the process. We'll just take a moment on each of these as we read them, because you can see they're very, very short. They just give you the briefest little description. But, you know, reflect a little bit on what they might be doing, or, you know, what a reservist might be about that's attached to that particular division of angels.
Seven, so. The angels of enlightenment. Urantia is now receiving the help of the third corps of seraphim dedicated to the fostering of planetary education. These angels are occupied with mental and moral training as it concerns individuals, families, groups, schools, communities, nations, and whole races.
Okay. One little comment I'll put in there to start with is notice that they purposely didn't call them the angels of education. It's, you know, kind of, you know, as you read it, they're fostering planetary education. Why didn't they call them the angels of education? Which would kind of match some of these other very straightforward labels that follow. What specifically are they talking about when they say education? You know, they're going back to, you know, the biggie section in paper 16, section 6, where they introduce the cosmic intuitions. And right at the end of that section, what do they say? They say, it is the purpose of education to develop and sharpen these innate endowments of the human mind. What are these innate endowments? That's the three cosmic intuitions. The purpose of education is to develop and sharpen individuals' relationship with the three cosmic intuitions. In other words, with the Holy Spirit. That's the purpose of education, period. You know, and that is, you know, it's the Holy Spirit, enlightenment. You know, we're not talking about just, you know, factual book learning here. We're talking about real education, true education. And so, you know, they're not necessarily going to be fostering dusty scholarship. Okay? I mean, yeah, there has to be some scholarship and whatnot, but it's not about creating bigger and bigger cisterns of knowledge. Okay? the definition of a scholar. You know, it's about creating individuals who are wellsprings of knowledge.
There you go.
Enlightenment. Okay.
I just, one of my favorite quotes goes with that in the foreword about mind. Therefore, is the universe illuminated by three kinds of light: material light, mm-hmm. intellectual insight, and spirit luminosity.
Right. You know, and this, you know, and the Holy Spirit is that interface between the mental and the spirit luminosity. You know, it is the mechanism for joining those two lights together. You know, it is both the, you know, your highest mind and your lowest spirit. You know, it is that interface point. You know, it gives you objective consciousness, and it also gives you direct engagement with spirit energy, mm-hmm. so that personality can engage you. And so, so some thoughts. And remember, when you're thinking about reservists, they're reservists. They're not activists. Okay? They're reservists. Most of the time, they're never activated, you know. So, you know, what might be going on here?
When you brought up the cosmic intuitions, mm-hmm. I was reading the second sentence here, the last
mm-hmm.
sentence.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought about the cosmic intuitions on an individual basis. and certainly your favorite right. quote, so few persons, it's right, personal, right. it's individual. Right. And yet, these angels are occupied, mental and moral, there's a right. there's a discussion there.
Right.
But individuals, families, groups, schools, communities, nations, and whole races.
Right.
So, I haven't really thought about it, but just because it just occurred to me, but right. to apply the cosmic intuitions mm-hmm. to these different
right.
platforms, these different right. groups, rather than just the individual.
Right. Yeah,
and it's intriguing.
Right, and remember how I've been trying to foster that recognition for a long, long time, because it's not the adjutants start this process. Each of the adjutants first is just engaging individuals, but more and more the adjutants can engage a collective. And we've talked about, it becomes very significant when the long-term adjutants, when you can get to 4, 5, and 6, when the long-term adjutants can engage the collective, at least the forward-leaning part of humanity, mm-hmm. You start to get a whole new super-additive phenomenon of the fourth adjutant engaging the collective, and then the fifth, and then the sixth, and, we're quivering on the very brink of the seventh. And that's going to be a fantastic thing when wisdom dawns in the collective, but that's nothing compared to what you just recognized.
Yeah.
Because if wisdom dawns in the, if the seventh adjutant can engage the collective, that means instantaneously the Holy Spirit can engage that collective. Objective
that's
consciousness will begin to dawn in a collective. And you'll have a phenomenon, that surpasses anything that mankind has ever, imagined. You'll really begin to be able to see what they've told you a couple times in the book, that there's something much more profound for your immediate brotherhood of man desire than to be kindred spirits. Think of what would happen if you were actually kindred minds. If you actually could begin to share a significant amount of objective consciousness, which is the only kind of mind that can be kindred, because obviously subjective is pretty individualistic. So that's the kind of thing, yeah, and run with that thought, see? Think about what that would look like as it begins to grow, until finally it encompasses whole races.
That's cool.
In the world.
I just wanted to bring up that unwritten prophecy of the 1,000 study groups. I don't know. It's not in the book, but
obviously, that could be fostering. You see, you could even speculate. Would there be some relationship between this group of angels and fostering that? Well, if it was actually, if a study group began to manifest an actual objective awareness and pursuit of the truths of the revelation, I'd say you can be guaranteed that these angels would be fostering progress of that group.
Yeah.
But if they're just sitting there, putting new wine in old wineskins, they may be, they'll try to make something out of it, but, these angels are going to be pretty limited, if we choose to be limited. They can't overrule our choices. They can tweak the environment and encourage you to make a better choice, but if you must be so small, then there you sit. That's one thing, and it's pretty. You can imagine that. In the not too distant future, you did have these dawning in the collective things. What role would these angels play? Now, on the flip side, it's the reservists. What kind of an emergency situation might come up relative to this group of angels where they would, invoke the reservists, activate reservists? They're reservists. I don't know.
Would it be they would come when, if we devolve down past where we become more atheists, or where we don't have a God or don't believe in God, or would they maybe then come?
Obviously,
send the reservists.
If the faint flicker is in threat of being snuffed, we're going to, it'd be really helpful to have some individuals with some real objective clarity that would just coincidentally appear on the scene, and begin to speak truth, in a way that would captivate, the masses and pull them out of that, downward spiral.
Eight, the angels of help. These are the seraphic ministers assigned to the assistance of those mortal agencies dedicated to the promotion of health and the prevention of disease. The present corps is the sixth group to serve during this dispensation.
Okay, so some thoughts about that. Is that, what do people think about that group?
I think they're based in Boulder.
I think they're very busy with our medical
and they shop at organic groceries.
Well, that's where the prevention is happening.
I was just going to comment on what Katie, I was noticing that on all these past ones that we read last week too, how often the ones that change the most often, this one has changed the most, I think, six times.
So far, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of activity, whereas the angels of the races have the original. They haven't changed at all.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other ones hasn't changed at all.
The future ones, I'm pretty sure, are the angels same the ones. They're the same, yeah.
So it'd be how many, 300 years or so?
No, we have no idea, It could have been a first one for a very long span of time, and maybe in the last 150 years it's been bang, 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 bang. It's only very recent that the word health even sort of had any real meaning in human consciousness. You go to Paris and, you've got the seven levels of subterranean, underneath Paris, and the water, source is on the seventh level, and guess where the sewer is? It's not below the lowest one. Right. That's why you drink bottled water then. You got to think, it's just so recent that there's been any notion, of health. So maybe, maybe things have been happening really fast and they've been changing them rapidly, Maybe every 50 years or something. Who knows? You could speculate. It's all over the place. But,
Chris,
yeah.
This is one that you can imagine the reservists. They've got a big group here. Mm-hmm. And they have, probably. And the number of major diseases that have wiped out so many people on the planet. So I can imagine there's a group of reservist doctors ready to go in case a worldwide crisis hits.
Yes, think about that in recent history. Is there a possibility that there was some sort of disease that was threatening us, that if it had been let to just, unchecked with our ignorance, it would have seriously impacted civilization going forward? And coincidentally, we had someone crop up that figured it out.
Yeah, you're right.
The answer, that could have been a reservist that was activated. Now, of course, the thing that, kind of mitigates against that a little bit is... we know that most often the reservists are not emblazoned on the pages of history. Right. So maybe we don't even know who that was, but maybe there was someone that did something and we don't even know about him, and a person we do know about picked up on that, or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that are in the shadows behind lots of very, well-known people.
Right. Right. Yeah. The master in the lab somewhere,
Well, and even if they have not functioned very often, you could see them in reserve, just in case.
Yeah.
Compared to the ones, the angels of enlightenment, the possibility of them functioning seemed a lot more remote than the angels of hell. So they must have a group just on command because of the kind of strange viral problems this world has. And so you could see them changing out more often because it's more intense, more frequent. It's like the angels of the nations, the same kind of...
Right. And right, see, and that bringing up that
hard
point,
driving.
See, that kind of argues against my thought, you know, maybe there's been a lot of changing in the angels of health going way, way, way back, because we all know that, you know, even the life carriers are kind of scratching their heads. Now, how are those malignant bacteria and viruses going to?
A few things. One is, did you guys discuss the word core and how many angels we're talking about in each one of these things?
Oh, we don't know. See, we don't know.
So it could be a variable number.
Right. It probably is a variable number. Okay.
So that's the other thing. Not only the number of times it cycles over, but especially, like you say, with the angels of health here. I know Judy's father lost his leg in a war accident, got blown off in World War II. And at the time, they knew penicillin was something, so they just took a bottle of it and poured it on his leg. I mean, that was the extent of their knowledge. You know, it didn't save the leg, but it saved his life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got to refine these things. And maybe the discoverer of penicillin was one of the reservists. Who knows? Yeah. You know, it was such an important, you know, key into the whole bacterial thing.
Yeah.
And the other thought is not just physical health, but mental health. You know, I think of Dr. Sadler, who was so instrumental. I mean, why did they pick him to give us this book as a key person in the whole history of this movement? He was a sharp mind and a person who knew the value of mental health. And I think, I don't know a whole lot of his history, but certainly after he got into the book, he knew the connection between spiritual health and mental health. And I think that's key.
And that's an important thing to notice, you know, that they purposely have two things. They have promotion of health and the prevention of disease, because they want you to recognize that health isn't just material. Mind as well. Yep, very good. All right, well, let's take another one.
9, the home seraphim. Urantia now enjoys the services of the 5th group of angelic ministers dedicated to the preservation and advancement of the home, the basic institution of human civilization.
And of course, that last phrase there is the key, as we all know. I mean, if you could have a very, very serious emergency if you reach some critical state of the breakdown of the home, because all human institutions are built upon that nucleus. And so all of civilization would collapse, you know, if the home collapses. So, and we all know that that's one of the things that's in very difficult circumstances during this transition stage that we're in. You know, that's the whole reason that the Urantia book is here, because we're going through this very difficult transition. We need all the help we can get. You know, they might be very active trying to foster the recognition of the fundamental value of the home to anything that could be called stability in society.
Yeah, I just find an interesting connection of those two words, very unlike words, preservation and advancement.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and just the very fact that they use preservation rather than conservation. Because, you know, here's a case where, you know, the rudiments of the home were established a long time ago. You know, and they just are. It's not like you have to somehow reinvent that. You know, and so it isn't really a conservation thing. You know, it is a preservation phenomenon. You know, it is the home, and it needs to be preserved. At the same time, it needs to be, you know, its relationship to an ever-advancing civilization needs to be recognized. But in a lot of ways, it's like personality. You know, it's a changeless element in the midst of change. Home just has to be.
Yeah, because when you think of, like, going back all the way to Andon and Fonta, they established a home, you know, so, and really it hasn't, it's right. Devolved from there. That was right. The first starting part.
Right, yeah, exactly. You know, we all know that how hard it was to even keep it going from that early founding point. It, you know, you go forward a little bit, and it started unraveling.
I can't remember the entirety of this quote, but there's a really good quote about the value of a home, and that it stands for both permanence and separation from others.
Right.
It's your place where you can go to.
It's your touchstone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason people get so swept up in their homes is because it becomes their statement about how they're different.
Right. Right. And like I pointed out, it's very important to recognize that when they coin words in the book that end in T-O-N, you know, that's town, i.e. hometown. You know, they mean that very literally. Now, that there is a touch world, if you will. You know, a hometown for every division of celestial life. You know, so this is something, you know, the notion of the home goes from here to the Father's worlds. You know, divinington, you know, all the way through to ascendington, you know, our hometown. So it's a very, very important element of the entire universe.
Speaking of the home here in number 7, they talk about families. And going back to their daily meeting, these you know, I can kind of see them going around the room and saying to each one of these heads, what's the status of your group? What do you need? And when you were talking about if the family is in trouble, then everything fails. So if that were the case, and there's certainly a lot of divorce, et cetera, you know, to say that, then and the cooperation, I mean, we've got these 12 groups, but they obviously work with each other. There are checks and balances on each other. They help each other. They say, well, if we do this, you angels of enlightenment will be helped because we can have the bar.
That's why they have the cabinet of 12 and have cabinet meetings.
And have cabinet
meetings. Foster that.
So if let's say in this case, the seraphim of the home says, I need some help, you know, everything just starts shuffling into that. Mm-hmm. You know, they all work together on the most important item.
I mean, it's fairly easy to imagine, you know, reservist training relative to true education and health. What would reservist training look like in this division, the home seraphim? Any thoughts?
What was the question again?
What would the training of the reservists be about for the group of reservists, the corps of reservists that's attached to the home seraphim?
Real estate school.
I think that's house training.
Spirituality.
All right. Well, yeah, there definitely needs to be a spiritual element. What do you think?
I don't want to answer that question because I don't really have one. But because I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of reservists on this project, on this piece, because there may be a whole lot in some other areas. But
right,
I was thinking about.
Well, we're coming up on, we know what the minimum number is. We'll come up on that in a minute.
So, Chris, I was thinking about the angels of nations and then thinking about the ones of enlightenment and health and the home. And it is really comforting to know that there are angels out there working for the betterment of the institutions that will safeguard the world. It's very comforting to know that there's a group of angels that will declare war on Joseph Stalin or Adolf Hitler if they proceed forward, and they will take up the battle cry. And these different angels that foster these institutions, it's just so reassuring and so wonderful that the heavenly government has provided for that. And it's got to bring a huge amount of stability to our better institutions. And the idea that there's a group of angels, whether there's very many reservists on the home or not, but a group of angels that are there to foster home life and how important it is. And it's not one of those things, I don't think, where you have these huge, gigantic crises called home life. Those are long-term things that could go good or bad. So having the angels watch over them for the good and fostering the good, it just, what a wonderful plan the universe government has for life on this planet.
And that you brought up a very important point. You know, when I say the word emergency, or when the revelators say the word emergency, humans think, okay, we've got the little red LEDs are ticking, you know, on the bomb. That's not the way these people see. Machiavelli and Melchizedek came because they're projecting over the next 2,000 years, and they see that there's an emergency. Because they can chart the line, and it's going down, and it's not coming back up again. And that's an emergency. They don't wait until the last possible second when humans might notice that there's an emergency.
That's a good point.
So some of these things could be in dire states of emergency right now in their mind, and we're clueless.
You mentioned some things that the home seraphim would be addressing. I'm just thinking back to what was addressed with the garden and the planetary prints, and also neighboring planet. And I think sex education was in there too.
That's a really great thought. Because that's certainly one of the things that Adam and Eve in the garden was modeling, true monogamy, the home. Very good, very good thought. Yeah.
They have the health, then they have the
to go back and look at all the little details they give you about about what Adam and Eve were doing, in the first garden. Not the desperate straits in the second garden, but in the first garden. And that would probably give you a lot of clues about these various divisions. That's a great idea.
Wouldn't also the parental child mindal connection be something that?
Very good thought too. What if there's signs that genetics are decaying so bad that even maternal instinct is threatened? That would be problematic for the home. Good thought too. Because we always are just amazed when we see some woman just completely rejecting her maternal instinct and throwing her baby in a garbage can. So I was like, wow, how does that work? Isn't that like immutable programming? But of course it's not, because I try to point out that's mindal. It's a very, very intimately tied to the biology mind is the first adjutant, but still, it can be overruled. It's not like it's hardwired. And if that is starting to function in a seemingly less and less hardwired way, less and less like it just happens in the mammals, we all know that the woman is the civilizer and the founder of the home. And so, that's a good point too. Very good point.
The other thing is to think about, this group is a manageable round the table kind of group, and very high powered intellects and values and experience, et cetera. But, there are billions of homes on the planet. And so, they don't all just go visit the homes. They don't have that big of a core, I wouldn't think. But they do have the network and some communication technique of saying to possibly every guardian angel on the planet, this is what we decided. This is what we'd like you to work on. Some way to get into every home and every parent and child relationship, etc., so that it covers the entire social and civilization.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's do one more. Great thoughts, everyone.
10. The angels of industry. This seraphic group is concerned with fostering industrial development and improving economic conditions among Urantia peoples. This core has been 7 times changed since the bestowal of Michael.
It's the 8th one, say. Seven times changed. Now, this is a great one for, we all know that as the 6th Adjutant, Dawn and Collective, and everyone got more and more excited about spiritual consciousness, you know, and it becomes this vast error and evil detector in our society. You know, we look for demons, you know. Spirit, the immature spiritual consciousness likes to point at error and evil and, you know, and label demons. You know, and we know how much of a tendency there is to demonize industry, you know, or economics. You know, there's industrial, you know, even more so, demonize, you know, industrial development, you know, and economics. I mean, right there, they're telling you, if you get too aggressive on that, they're actually going to take you out. I mean, they're not going to let, you know, humans derail their domain of oversight. You know, so this works is a great example of one that works both positively and negatively. You know, we've had, you know, in the previous ones, there's been a strong tendency. It's like, oh, yeah, they're doing all these positive, encouraging things. Well, it works the other way, too. You know, if you're a force in the world, you know, you and some group say, are a force in the world that's seriously threatening the home, woe unto you. There's that other side that could come into play. You know, we talked about that. You know, it's not just the angels of nation life that might do the father-like hand. You know, we want to remind ourselves that we are not so intimately in the mother-like expression of the angels here in this paper. You bring in the guardian angels, and that's, you know. But here, you know, they're going to do tough love if they have to, too. So, you know, it works both ways. And to think about that, about how you watch something like in industrial development, you know, and it's an essential part of the process. And if that gets threatened, you know, it's things are going to coincidentally happen to thwart that threat.
I thought I'd bring up the 99 weeks of unemployment that they haven't extended. I don't know if anyone's got any thoughts on what these angels are going to do.
They'll be employed.
Well, there's, you know, and again, you know, I'm always try to keep in mind, it doesn't mean occasionally they don't focus on some real minute details, but by and large, these are over-controllers, not controllers. And you'll see them emphasize that when we're done with the 12 here. You know, they're over-controllers. But obviously, it gets pretty control mode when you, especially if you activate a reservist. You know, that's getting right into the trenches. But in general, they're over-controllers. They're tweaking. They're gently guiding. Again, and they can do it that way. They don't have to go panic and, you know, their hair burning because they can see it way before it gets to that point.
Yeah, I had the opposite thought of, or the converse thought of mm-hmm. that projection. I mean, things could be really, really bad to us, and right. they have a calculate. They have just recently got all the puzzle pieces to fit just right, and things are going to look really good in 2,000 years. Yeah. But, you know, and we're like, oh,
no, you know. We're running around with our hair on fire, right? Yeah, and they're saying, fear not. Yeah, all is under control.
Chris?
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and Bill Gates strikes me as a perfect example of that. I mean, just think how that one man, or, well, maybe he's not just one man, but mm-hmm. think how the advent of the computer has changed our world, and it's only been around for what, less than 80 years or something, but in our lives on a daily basis and in our pocketbooks and everything, 10 or 15. But that's a perfect example. I mean, it's put so many people out of work, and yet it's put a lot of people to work, and who knows the trajectory of where that technology is supposed to take us, but a lot of jobs have been eliminated.
And thank goodness that Bill Gates, the marketer, had Steve Jobs the inventor.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we don't want to go off into that ism, do we?
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
And I'm not suggesting that this is right.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look, because we're reading the Reserve Corps later,
yeah.
You look at the angels of industry, and you can imagine, and I'm not saying this happened, but you can imagine that China in the last 25 years has been in a very critical place where it could have gone almost either way. And I remember going into China 25, 30 years ago, it was so primitive. It was just desperate.
Yeah.
Desperate. Everything was desperate. And you can imagine whether it's the angels working on the short term, because you point out they work on the long term, but I think it would be fair to point out they work on the short term. In the life of Abraham Lincoln, they were probably working on the short term.
Yeah.
So they probably, I'm sure they do both.
Yeah.
So you just picture a condition, not to be confused with this is what's really happened, but in that precarious moment in China's history, it is very possible that one of their key leaders could have been a reservist. And because China has made such an incredible positive movement for the people of China, they're now feeding their civilization. It's gotten so much better. And I can imagine the angels of industry just hovering over China in the last 50 years in hopes of an improvement to that race of people, that civilization.
Yeah.
So that's an example, in my mind, how it could work. And it might be a person you'd never heard of, but it might have been a moment in time where the political sway could have gone the exact opposite direction and stayed more toward the Soviet control model instead of this model that they ended up evolving into, where a blend of government control and yet enough capitalism to allow the society to advance.
Actually, it was kept alive during the Mao years by one of his right-hand people who emerged as a leader in 79 and declared capitalism is our road. There you go. Mm-hmm. Deng Xiaoping played that, you know.
And just a little side note on that. As soon as you say industrial development, you obviously think of China, a great example of that today. And of course, we think of coal burning, coal burning, and we think of commercials that are filmed in black and white and have ominous music and things, But now remember, what are the things we learn in the fifth ethical revelation? It's not a coincidence that there was a carboniferous period. Planets all have carboniferous periods. Planets all have a reservoir of coal and oil and gas that's built up. Coincidentally, because there are going to be humans who are going to need that in the early stages of industrial development. Every single planet burns coal and oil and gas. It's not some sign of the fall of man. It's part of the plan. They plan planets to evolve that way because humans need that. The whole plan for the atmosphere and everything is built, it's all understood, it's all built in, okay? It's not a surprise to anyone on high that we're burning coal and oil, okay? Remember how coincidentally there was an ice age just when man needed to be prodded, okay? It's nothing coincidental, it's all part of a system, Now, we need to really challenge these insidious isms that have affected mankind's thinking. That somehow man is not part of the system. That he's a virus or a cancer in the system. No, the only reason there is this planet is because it's meant to be inhabited by us. The only reason there's any place to stand in the entire universe is because beings need a place to stand. Okay. To really aggressively go after those thoughts in your head that would think that somehow I'm not part of this system, reject the neo-Darwinists and their secular notions, and we don't have to worry that we're going to somehow go beyond some tipping point. We've got 12 divisions of angels, let alone all the other stuff, that are making sure that we stay between the lines that need to be stayed between. Okay? Yeah, we all should be challenging ourselves to be helping the angels, but if we're driven by fear that mankind is going to destroy some domain, that man is going to destroy the home or whatnot, no. You will not do it. If it gets bad enough, they'll activate all the reservists. Okay? it's not going to happen. You're not going to destroy the earth by industry. You're not going to destroy the home. You're not, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not going to happen. You know, and mankind needs to start engaging these areas, like health or something, with that fear not challenge. Jesus said, fear not, and this is why. There's nothing to fear. It's all in God's hands. It's okay.
Do you feel that way about nuclear weapons too?
Yeah. How could I not feel that way about anything?
What center does it all have?
Do we have a relative first source and center of all things and beings? You know? A wishy-washy first source and center of all things and beings? No. An absolute first source and center of all beings. And we read it back, you know, before the inevitabilities. In the conduct, not just the destiny, but in the conduct, his way, you know, prevails. Period.
Yeah, Jason. I know you'd said that you would answer that question that I had about language.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We got more people that speak Chinese in the world, but English was and still is, I believe, the language of commerce.
Well, yeah, we all know that there's going to eventually be one language. You know, you can speculate that maybe it's going to be some evolution of English, you know, that brings in Chinese. You know, just like English has been bringing in every other language, there'll be some polyglot language, you know, that may very well kind of have English core because it's sort of already sort of happening, but the internet and stuff. But yeah, thank you for bringing up the language thing. You know, the angels of enlightenment. Okay? A very key part of what you get from the three cosmic intuitions is language, a common language. That we only have language because we're tuned into that objective consciousness. You know, it allows me to say the words I'm saying and for you to understand them. If you were an island universe, and so was I, language is impossible. You know, it's only the all are, you know, God the Mother, and all that comes from God the Mother that allows this to happen. And so, yeah, I mean, more and more in tune with the first cosmic intuition, especially, so that we don't lose language. That's, many people think that's there's a danger, you know, of losing the power of language because we start blurring words together and using, you know, hyperbole when you shouldn't and whatnot. You know, there's a lot of attack on language going on. They would be very concerned about the attack on language. You know, and I you hear me all the time being an advocate for using the revelations to challenge yourself to rediscover the precision and glory of language.
Yeah. Chris,
yeah.
When you read the first few words, the key word there is industry.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times what comes to mind is how many miles of track can you lay, how many tons of coal can you get out of the ground, how many widgets can you make. And then you look at their definition.
Mm-hmm.
The improving economic conditions among the peoples of your rancho.
Yeah.
It goes back to the people. It goes back to the individuals, the families. You know, it's not about the stuff. It's not about the coal or the energy or the computer programming or the speed of it, any of that stuff. I mean, all of that is the framework, but it has to do with the people.
Absolutely. How do you think that, when
you mention that, first of all, you said that about the Ice Age, so then that mm-hmm. made me think and question, okay, so then you're saying that the Ice Age was not a matter of nature. It happened because somebody...
No, it was wholly natural, but coincidentally... it's all...
So they knew that was coming.
They knew that was coming from the beginning.
So they used that for... Something else. Is that what you're saying?
The earth and life and everything is all planned together as one system. It all works together.
And then what about like when the natural disasters happen and stuff? What do you think is happening there?
A natural disaster happens.
Millions of people, thousands of people, hundreds of thousands that die. And
did anyone really die?
Not spiritually or soul death, no.
See,
but then how about the home? That disrupts the home because somebody died. So how is that for good?
Look how people rally. People
that's
rally
true.
Together and spirituality elevates.
You're right there. That's a good point.
But it's the institution of the home. It's not that number of homes.
Yeah, right. Again. And I was going to make that point.
They're trying to achieve a certain quality level.
Right.
It can't be too high a quality because of this current state, but it's got to be, high enough to where it's going to be sustainable through the future.
Right. It's not extremely likely that they're actually engaging your home. Okay, they're fostering the home. You have free will choice. They can foster the recognition of a better home. And they sure hope that you choose to notice that and choose to model your home after what they're fostering the recognition of, but you can choose just the opposite.
I know, but I'm saying that the nature disrupts disrupts somebody's home.
Right, yeah, right. So, yeah, they have to work with all that. They're very wise. You can speculate. What if there was a potential for a natural disaster that would be so cataclysmic in the right place at the wrong time, or maybe the wrong place at the wrong time, maybe you should just say, that it would really threaten some area here. If that was the case, you could they could have the master physical controller stop that.
They have all the other angels, in other groups that are looking out for that kind of situation to make sure that we do get to where we need to be just in general. So,
it's not highly likely.
Then the second question that arose was when you were saying about language. And so Adam and Eve started out with speaking the language of your verse of them when they came here.
No.
No, they didn't. So what language did they speak?
No, I mean, they came and they started an alphabet, remember they were going to... they were, the Andonite tongue, was here, and they were gonna foster the development of that, because it had gotten the ball got all gotten dropped back 200,000 years ago. The prince's staff was created an alphabet, and we're gonna be fostering language, development of language, and then that all fell apart. Yeah. Adam and Eve are gonna pick that up again, try to get that going. So that's a great example of what John brought up, the very fact that either the prince's staff, one of the divisions of the prince's staff, or one of the aspects of the garden was focused on a certain thing, Obviously, because we don't have the staff or the garden, these angels are going to have to be picking up a lot of those areas. All right, let's take another one here. Maybe we'll take another one.
Yeah, I looked it up in the balcony.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying. We don't have to worry.
Right. That doesn't mean you don't work, but you don't worry.
Yeah.
You work for the betterment. You don't just sit there and wait for the angels to do it. You actively work, but you do so without worry.
Well, no.
Don't lose energy to worry.
That was
okay. Okay.
You said there's no reason to worry, and she was talking about nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Because in the end, it's going to all come out all right.
Yeah.
But if you were one of the 6 million Jews under Hitler, they probably didn't feel that.
Right, but again, we got it. You got it. We always say, well, but someone died. No, everyone dies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
everyone dies. You have to let go of that. Yes, it's important. Obviously, they don't have. They don't care at all about whether you live or die. But they don't think of it the way we do. For us, it's everything. Life and death. No, life. There is no death. And you need to challenge yourself to not always put that as a dichotomy in your mind. Life, death. There's just life. That's that famous old story about the doctor. I think it was back in World War II. Where the guy is severely injured and he's laying in the hospital bed in the military hospital on the front lines, and the doctor comes over to the bed and he looks up and says, doctor, can you keep me from dying? And the doctor looks at him and says, no. but I can help you to live. I mean, it's one of the most fundamental things that they're trying to challenge. Like I said last week, dichotomies. You have to challenge thinking in dichotomies all the way to that big one. Fear not, even unto death. Fear not. There's no guarantee. A tree's not going to fall on you tomorrow. The angels are not going to sweep down necessarily. It's going to be a pretty rare event. They're going to sweep down and push the tree out of the way, okay? Or stop the tsunami or the earthquake or whatever. People die. Remember these. When you're talking about over control, you're talking about the big picture. The Father has given you everything you need to be an individual of integrity connected to eternity, regardless of whether you live or die. That's already taken care of, absolutely. They don't need to worry about that. They're worried about the big picture.
What it seems to me is it's so senseless for the sacrifice, it seems, of all that many people. And now in the situation...
Has no positive come from that?
Well, it seems like when there's really an evil, a real evil,
yeah.
And well, like the debt we're mounting up right now is a real evil.
Well, there's some real evils. It isn't supposed to be so negative. But why is it so negative? Because Lucifer inaugurated the orgy of darkness and death. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean that on normal worlds there isn't still cataclysms and death and war. I mean, war is on every world. War is an indispensable part of early progressing civilization. It gets you from the clan and tribe state to nation state. It's cattle prod of progress. But it's only senseless if you choose to circumscribe your viewpoint of reality. The narrower you see the world, the more senseless it becomes. You have to see it in the big picture, or you'll despair.
The explanation is that we are perfecting beings. We're meant to learn. All of these things are happening so that we can figure out in the eternity of our existence. Mm-hmm. How to not have it happen on some planet when we get to be sort of in a little bit bigger position.
Right, there's that.
This is our learning. So yeah, all these horrible things are happening, but they're letting it happen because we're meant to try to figure out how to solve these problems. We're not coddled beings, we're perfecting beings.
Right. And we're also the senseless thought. Part of the reason that you say the word senseless, anyone says that word senseless, is because the life cut short thought. All the things that they could have done. Remember, everything that they possibly could have done had they lived to be 500 years old, which is not even possible yet, is going to happen in the mansion worlds. That's why they're mansion worlds. See, nothing, they pick up right where they left off. Nothing was lost. Nothing of survival value is ever lost.
Okay.
Period. Yeah. And this is an incredible burden-lifting revelation. To see that anew. Let go of the burden that death of 6 million Jews heaps upon us. Yes, we want to challenge ourselves to not be killing people by the millions, but nothing of survival value was lost. All those people pick up right where they left off and get to do everything essential that they would have done. And we don't want to belabor this too much here.
Doesn't the book say in the paper we just read that the seraphic angels, the guardians of destiny, either main concern is our mortal survival. It's what happens after death. That they're preparing us now for what happens. And it's the same with the adjuster.
Right. We talked about that extensively.
The idea is the point you made, is what we have to look forward to after death. And that
Yeah, your guardian angel doesn't guard you from dying. Your adjuster doesn't, you know, work to prevent you from dying.
You want to be prepared for death? I suggest a near-life experience.
Yeah. Yeah, those who have had near-life experiences good don't fear death anymore. Because mm-hmm. they know it doesn't mean anything. You know, you pick up right where you left off.
The thing we have to remember here is in this paper we're talking about planetary government, planetary right. consciousness. Yeah. You mentioned earlier that if it were necessary, the master physical controller would step in. If it's necessary to do X, Y, or Z on the physical level. If it's necessary, and they say 33 times, the Most High stepped in and did X, Y, or Z, politically, whatever it was. Maybe, you know, I'm convinced that the Magna Carta was one of those things. But it might have been, like Mo was talking about, some little Chinese woman who was critical in her garden having a thought was that important. And so you're talking about the individuals and the big scheme of things in the mansion worlds, et cetera. So there's two different things here. This is planetary. And there are minimal criteria. Yeah. Losing the yellow, or not the yellow race, the orange race, mm-hmm. or 6 million Jews, or, you know, 10 nuclear bombs versus 100 nuclear bombs, whatever those are, they're going to keep all of that in perspective, not look at the individual, but look at the planetary scope and say, okay, so we lost Pakistan, that's okay because the entire planet's going to survive, or whatever terrible short-range thing might be. I mean, certainly Stalin killed 600-700 million people, whatever, 60 million.
60 million.
That's even worse than Hitler. Mm-hmm. But was it okay? Evidently, it was okay in the long in the big arc picture. Of, will we get to light and life?
I mean, you got to give a little example of that. Remember, if you go back and read with Anna Infanta, you know, they pointed out that there was lots and lots of warfare right away. Yeah. And some of the best strains were irretrievably lost. You know, that it was they mentioned it was a great tragedy. You know, that there was no way to get that back. It was lost. See, they didn't intervene and prevent that from being lost because they trust in the integrity of the whole. They don't micromanage you like that. You know, they trust.
Maybe those superior strains did not develop good fighting ability to defend themselves.
Whatever. I mean, okay, let's... There. Okay. We've got to keep going.
Okay. 11.
Wait, one more thing.
They could sound a little cold-hearted, what we just said. So another perspective on Bobby's comment is that the Father in Heaven lives within us, and every one of those people, or most of the people in Auschwitz, had a father fragment that suffered right along with him. And it's awful, and evil is awful, and sin is horrendous. And through the learning of it, mankind learns to not do that anymore. And it's the free will, they give us the free will, but the Father pains when we pain and lives with us through that. And so I'm with you on this, the whole big picture, because that's the way the Supreme Being works and the way the universe works. But God is not removed from our lives or from our suffering. And it's through our suffering that we learn the great lessons, to the point that we learn that love is better than hate, peace is better than war, goodness is better than evil, and all of those things that are learned through that evolutionary grind that we go through, that comes out right in the long process.
You know, like it's like if you have, when you're thinking about that, taking it personally, like if I let a child of mine die like God does with us, I couldn't see very far of where they were going to be, you know. But he can see us way, way, way. And he's, okay, so I'm going to lose this precious child on this little earth here. But no, in 10,000 years or 10 million years, she's going to be doing such and such, you know. So it's going to be awesome and okay. So I think that's a good way to look at
it. Can you just make one little comment here? I mean, okay.
Wait. So, remember what Eve did when she saw that things were going downhill and it was looking really grim. And they were very
sad, and you know, everything was going wrong, and she thought, oh, this is just awful, and it was terrible back then. So she decided that she would take it into her own hands and try to circumvent the situation, and that didn't end up so well. So
no,
sometimes
didn't.
When we perceive it as being really, really, really bad, we're not being far-seeing enough.
That's what I'm saying.
We don't see down the path like we need to. And you need to trust more instead of trying to circumvent the process.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, one little comment, and then we're going to go to the next thing. And again, remember what they're doing with the fifth epical revelation. You know, how did it start? It didn't start with the tough stuff. It started with the most profound revelation of the nature of God the Father and His love. And we just went through the most incredible revelation of just how intimate that absolute love is. It's not next to your mind. It's not above your mind. It's in your mind. Infinite absolute love. You need to absolutely know that now and forevermore. That is unassailable. You trust that infinitely. Now, built upon that sure knowledge of the love of God for you directly, we're going to step back, we're going to take a deep breath, and we're going to talk about the other side of the picture, the difficult aspects of reality. And we're not going to be afraid. We're going to talk about the angels of the trumpets, and we're not going to be afraid. We're going to talk about death, and we're not going to be afraid. Okay? We have to challenge ourselves to trust implicitly so that we can face the facts. We're never going to be part of the dawning of the seventh adjutant, the spirit of wisdom in the collective, if we don't face facts and adjust them to ideals. Because that's the only way you can achieve wisdom. Okay? And mankind has never really known the facts. And he's never had the knowledge of the love of God in order to have the courage to face the facts. Now we do. We have to have the courage. We've got to face these facts. There's some difficult things, and they have to be recognized, and we need to go forward with those facts.
All right. 11, the angels of diversion. These are the seraphim who foster the values of play, humor, and rest. They ever seek to uplift man's recreational diversions and thus to promote the more profitable utilization of human leisure. The present core is the third of that order to minister on Urantia.
Now, the one key thing to note there is, again, every word is important. It doesn't say these are the seraphim who foster play, humor, and rest. What does it say?
Values.
Values. Is the value in here, here, or here? Okay? It's a spirit word. Okay? We talked about that a long time ago. These are this division of angels are working on trying to uplift so that there's a true spiritual character woven into play, humor, and rest. So they're not just material and basal mindal phenomena. Humor, crude, basal, biologic. No, it needs to be uplifted, and woven with value. So that when you step back from your toil and you play, enjoy humor or rest, it's not a stasis. It's a dynamic, living phenomenon that's helping you to grow. It has spiritual energy woven into it so that spirit gravity can lift, can grab a hold of you even then and be pulling you up. When you're enjoying humor, spirit gravity is lifting you up. Yeah. When you're resting, spirit gravity is lifting you up. So they're working actively on that to try to challenge us in various ways to not be so crude, primitive in our thoughts in these areas.
Think about
so materialistic.
That. The toil of let's say you just had the toil of drudgery of some work that you were doing. And you didn't have any play or humor. But then when you go home and you have this play and humor and you can just take things light, you are uplifted. I mean, just play itself, mm-hmm. and good humor uplifts you, you know, and then, boy, you can really grow through that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, and they're trying to make it all the more directly spiritual and not just happy-mindal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Levity's a cool word that way.
Levity, see? Yeah. Lifting up, yeah. Literally. It's spirit balance, gravity.
Balance in all things, where the angels of progress and the angels of the churches kind of counterbalance each other. The angels of industry and the angels of diversion, who are just right next to each other.
Yep, very good.
Our society, I think our whole planet is, well, if you're not productive, you're not valuable. But it's hard for us to think, oh, well, if I sit down and have a little rest, or if I make a little joke, or if I appreciate what's going on in the TV or whatever it is, that is as of similar value. How do I? And you have to ask yourself personally, how do I make this valuable? I can understand how I can make, you know, writing a book or digging the coal out of the ground or whatever it is. That's work. That's toil. That's easy to understand how that can be valuable. But how do you give the other value and make them equal?
Well, that's worthwhile. See, again, we're trying to use the word value specifically as a spirit word.
Right.
To think about, you know, ways that they might be doing this. For instance, we look at TV and we go, wow, that's valueless. Let's get rid of TV, or, you know, my family is going to eliminate TV. No, join in with this division of angels and foster the injection of value into TV. Yeah. You know, they're not trying to get rid of that which is valueless. They're trying to weave value into it.
Right.
You know, they're not going to outlaw humor because it's valueless. Mm-hmm. They're going to try to weave value into humor. Definitely, most of the time, they're working in a positive mode. I like that. Yeah, you got one thing?
There's a spiritual economy.
Yeah, there's a spiritual economy, too. Yeah, and how that ties with what you're just bringing up with the economy there in the industry.
Well,
yeah, 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 just...
Well, the angels of superhuman ministry. These are the angels of the angels. Those seraphim who are assigned to the ministry of all other superhuman life on the planet, temporary or permanent. This corps has served since the beginning of the current dispensation.
Wow. The primary midwares are going to be working really closely with that crew, because remember, they tell you that that's one of the main things that the primary midwares are doing, because they're, you know, they don't have an easy ability to engage the material things, so they, you know, rarely serve as material hands. You know, they're much more like the angels, and so they, you know, they do a lot with all of the celestial beings that are on the planet and working with them. So primary midwares would be intimately involved in that with that crew. There is a fascinating one to ponder. What do reservists in that division look like?
That's right.
Doesn't that one make your brain twist a little bit? If you're a reservist in that division, what are they training you for?
An activity that would somehow facilitate.
Very interesting to think about, isn't it?
More serviceable to the angelic.
Yeah, very. Just hold that thought in your head a little bit, and we'll go forward here. Why don't you read some more?
When these groups of master seraphim disagree in matters of planetary policy or procedure, their differences are usually composed by the governor general. But all his rulings are subject to appeal in accordance with the nature and gravity of the issues involved in the disagreement. None of these angelic groups exercise direct or arbitrary control over the domains of their assignment. They cannot fully control the affairs of their respective realms of action, but they can and do so manipulate planetary conditions and so associate circumstances as favorably to influence the spheres of human activity to which they are attached.
We've alluded to that second paragraph there a lot. You know, I mean, they're always working in every indirect way. Like I pointed out, every time you see, some sort of negation of the word direct, they mean indirect. They're doing everything direct that they can possibly do. And the other little thing, remind yourself in the context of this planetary government, that first paragraph there, because we don't have a planetary prince and his tribunals, you've got this very kind of odd judicial thing going on. Like we mentioned, that a lot of times they're just sort of going to Father Governor General and asking him, and most of the time they just follow his recommendations. But you don't have the prince's tribunal to really go directly to. So if it's not going to be a conciliatory commission, it's going to have to be passed up to higher tribunals.
Chris, I read ahead for the first time in quite a while. It wasn't hard. But they can and do so manipulate. What I'm concerned about, and I find fascinating, I don't know if anybody else does, is how they do, what they're actually doing, manipulate planetary conditions and so associate circumstances. Now, manipulate planetary conditions, that would involve the midwares, right? If they're manipulating conditions on the planet.
It could be physical. Lots of things. It doesn't have to be physical. One of the things it could be is like what I was just saying to Pam a little bit ago. If you set up conditions where there is the recognition of the true home, then individuals then have that very clear demonstration in front of them to choose. Remember, that's exactly the way Adam and Eve, went about it. They didn't go out and, start, tweaking individual home lives. They weren't micromanaging. They were trying to give an example of a true home and a true monogamous relationship that everyone could then see and go, that looks really interesting. I'll choose that. So, it's a lot of that is going to be not just material, but mindful conditions.
Okay. And
they say planetary conditions.
And that's what I suspect. Right. Okay, that was good. And what I suspected is going on in the main when they associate circumstances, because when you associate circumstances, that's a lot in your mind. That's not so much in the...
And it also can be coincidentally these two people happen to be together at the same place at the same time. And, all those tweaking, it's angel tweaking. It's like we always say. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're talking about guardian seraphim or you're talking about the master seraphim. They're the tweakers. They just tweak everything that they can tweak. They're just constantly, playing around just outside of the domain of free will dignity and tweaking everything they can get their hands on to try to foster it, towards what it ought to be.
Ideas
no, you'll see they address that just like
they do not.
They're going to talk about what you
They don't plant ideas directly.
Ideas that are already
like
in.
Whisper in their ears.
Now, here, go ahead and read. You'll
the
see.
Master Seraphim of Planetary Supervision utilize many agencies for the prosecution of their missions. They function as ideational clearinghouses, mind focalizers, and project promoters. While unable to inject new and higher conceptions into human minds, they often act to intensify some higher ideal which has already appeared within a human intellect.
Right, so see again, they can't put anything directly in, but if you or I start up a good good train of progress, they're going to do everything they can to the environment to foster that.
So only one person has to have that.
Could be just one or whatever,
Kind of way the book came together. Yeah. They found one person on the planet.
Or whatever. Right. Yeah, so again, and it's just everything that they can do, and that ideational clearinghouses, mind vocalizers, and project promoters, so here you got these angels, and they're getting ideas from everyone, in the board meeting or the cabinet meetings or what have you, bringing in all these ideas. They take all those ideas, bring them to a focus, and put forward a project. Yeah, so just like that, they're giving you a little sense of just the way they go about that. They're the ones that are, using their wisdom to bring ideas to a focus and to put forward a project, to translate ideals into ideas in a productive way.
What was that quote you read there, Shane, about luminosity? Mm-hmm. I mean, wasn't that one of the key words? Mm-hmm. It seems to me that to be active rather than passive in this process, we can ask our guardian angel to illuminate, to do just this, give them permission. Illuminate those higher ideals that we have and give them permission. And then you forget about it. But you start out with that. You before you go to bed, first thing in the morning, whenever, during your meditation, prayer time, you give them permission to do that. And that, they got carte blanche. You say, okay, great. He's on board. She's on board.
And that interplay between these angels taking care of the big picture and your guardian angel, knows what's going on with this, and they'll foster, if you can maybe play a role in one of these things, these angels are not going to come to your doorstep. You have a guardian angel that can foster, your role in that. As long as it really is about you and your destiny, they're not going to be really engaging these angels in a, as direct assistance necessarily in these projects, but they're certainly coordinating with those projects.
We've all experienced that to some degree, depending on whatever project we're working on. That's why the muses, the idea of muses, because you get this idea and you sift it out from all the stuff, and it's more beautiful, and it's more precise, and it's more true. And so you say, oh, okay, well, obviously, I better go with that. This is the way to write it. This is the way to sculpt it. This is the way to put it through the production system, whatever it happens to be. But you see that that's the fundamentals of the third cosmic intuition: good, better, and best. Oh, I'm going to choose the better in this situation. And gosh, it sure feels like somebody was whispering in my ear about that. Because the angel is literally saying, this is better than this. Go with that. And you say, okay, great.
You first have to have the thought, though. Because if you don't have the thought, they can't reach you. So you got to one human is all it takes, one person, just to make that thought, and then they can grab it. And then they can do their little intensification of that idea.
But it doesn't even say they grab it. It just says they intensify it.
Right.
I look upon it like kind of like grabbing, because it's going right up into the atmosphere.
Maybe they're working from a pool of all our minds.
Well, it's just, always, they're not, they don't directly engage your mind. They're going to, if you're doing something that's productive for you in relative to eternity, or if it fits into the bigger picture of the planet, they'll foster that. That person that you need to make that happen will come into your life. Those sorts of things. And it's all done in very subtle, tweaking ways. There's no puppeteering of you. There really isn't. There's no whispering in your ear. It's just, they don't have to whisper in your ear to go left. It's just coincidentally, there's a tree over the path that goes to the right. So, okay, I'll go left. That's the way they work, okay? That's angel tweaking.
Nice and subtle.
Yeah. It's over control.
There's a tree there.
Yeah.
But aside from these many means of positive action, the Master Seraphim ensure planetary progress against vital jeopardy through the mobilization, training, and maintenance of the reserve core of destiny. The chief function of these reservists is to ensure against breakdown of evolutionary progress. They are the provisions which the celestial forces have made against surprise. They are the guarantees against disaster.
Okay. Who would like to do some reading on the reservists?
I don't want to read, but I want to.
Yeah, yeah. Before you do, I just wanted to note that that very last statement. They are the guarantees against disaster.
Against disaster.
Okay? Guarantees. You know, take that word directly, literally, like they want you to, and fear not. Okay? There will not be true, real disaster. There'll be things that humans think are disasters, but they aren't really disasters to the progress, you know, the future of the planet. Because there's guarantees against that. You know, if we're so clueless to all, you know, to all this angel tweaking of these 12 divisions, then the fallback is the reservist. And it's guaranteed. It's going to go the way it needs to go.
Does that mean they only come into play during fallback?
Yeah, like that. So that he just said. See, that's the point they were just making. Yeah.
So we were lucky enough to stand in front of a table where Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin. It was in Yalta, Ukraine. We visited there 2 or 3 years ago. You could actually go right to the table that they signed the terms of what they were going to enforce after World War II. And I really had the impression then, and I do now, of the forces that were taking place there. We don't know who reservists have been, except many people speculate Abe Lincoln was a reservist. And I think that was the Apocrypha from the time of the Revelation. But Winston Churchill, the only thing that he defies all the rules of reservist because of the point that he was well known, but he was an absolute...
Not all the rules, just he's one of the exceptions.
An exception. He was well known, but he was in disfavor, major disfavor, and had been in major disfavor since 1917. And they called him the alone years of Churchill until he rose in about 1938 or 37 in Parliament, where he continued to warn against what he called, instead of the Nazis, he mispronounced it intentionally, the Nazis. And the confluence of the number of angels that we just read about that must have been there, when you think that Joseph Stalin was about the most evil man that ever lived, who was also fighting another incredibly evil man, with probably a reservist at that table, Churchill, and this powerful man, Roosevelt, in the changing of severe world conditions that were disastrous and could have been disastrous if the Nazis had taken over that part of the world. And you think about the number of types of angels that had to be involved. Of course, we had the angels of the nations, but the angels of the races. With the extermination of the Jewish people, the angels of progress, the angels of religion. And what a conflict they must have had, the angels of religion, when you've got Joseph Stalin, who was banning religion to 200 million people, and yet they're going to side with Stalin at this moment, even though the allegiances must have shifted very quickly from that moment of that signing. And the angels of health and the future and the home. You just picture this confluence that was happening at that very moment. Yeah. What an amazing moment in history. And I'm very surprised if Churchill wasn't a reservist, but even if he wasn't, the force field of angels that had to be hovering over Yalta during that few days experience during World War II had to be as big a congregation of angels working together to make this planet survivable as we've seen in 100 years.
And don't forget, we ain't seen nothing yet. We're just steaming out onto the high seas. We haven't even begun to experience upheaval. All right.
One quick one.
Quickly.
Added to what you just said, and Roosevelt's decision to select Harry Truman when his whole party was expecting him to anoint as his successor. Well, he was on his deathbed by then almost. A communist sympathizer, I can't remember his name, but that who was in line. Roosevelt personally selected Truman and called him up personally.
Yeah. All right, so let's do the reservists here.
Seven.
This is,
it looks long, but a lot of it is actually, I mean, especially the whole end, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Oh, it'll take us a few minutes, but it's pretty straightforward. Just go ahead.
No, I don't want to bust through it. Really.
We're not going to bust through it. I think it'll be fine. We're okay. As long as we don't have, as long as anyone doesn't, you know, want to make a 15-minute speech, we'll be fine.
Seven, the Reserve Corps of Destiny. The Reserve Corps of Destiny consists of living men and women who have been admitted to the special service of the superhuman administration of world affairs. This corps is made up of the men and women of each generation who are chosen by the spirit directors of the realm to assist in the conduct of the ministry of mercy and wisdom to the children of time on the evolutionary worlds. It is the general practice in the conduct of the affairs of the ascension plans to begin this liaison utilization of mortal will creatures immediately they are competent and trustworthy to assume such responsibilities. Accordingly, as soon as men and women appear on the stage of temporal action with sufficient mental capacity, adequate moral status, and requisite spirituality, they are quickly assigned to the appropriate celestial group of planetary personalities as human liaisons, mortal assistants. When human beings are chosen as protectors of planetary destiny, when they become pivotal individuals in the plans which the world administrators are prosecuting, at that time the planetary chief of Seraphim confirms their temporal attachment to the Seraphic Corps and appoints personal destiny guardians to serve with these mortal reservists. All reservists have self-conscious adjusters, and most of them function in the higher cosmic circles of intellectual achievement and spiritual attainment.
Self-conscious adjusters, self-acting adjusters, just emphasizing the, you know, saying it from the conscious side. That, you know, normally their consciousness is woven into your consciousness, your higher consciousness anyway. But to be self-acting is to really have a separate conscious phenomenon. And even when they're inside, they don't necessarily have to detach, but inside there can be a real separation because they're self-acting, where here they are and here you are, and you can go, oh, what's that? See, if a self-acting adjuster is more easily recognizable internally because there's that separation of self-consciousness relative to your self-consciousness, two selves that have some separation between them instead of being all woven together, so there's much greater potential for you to recognize that you have an adjuster within.
Is that how Philo described it?
Yeah. All right.
Mortals of the realm are chosen for service in the Reserve Corps of Destiny on the inhabited worlds because of 1. Special capacity for being secretly rehearsed for numerous possible emergency missions in the conduct of various activities of world affairs. 2. Wholehearted dedication to some special social, economic, political, spiritual, or other cause, coupled with willingness to serve without human recognition and rewards.
Underline that last phrase. Yeah. Lots of people who have wholehearted dedication, but is it coupled with willingness to serve without human recognition and rewards? Are they truly humble?
3. The possession of a thought adjuster of extraordinary versatility and probable pre-Urantia experience in coping with planetary difficulties and contending with impending world emergency situations.
It's all about emergency.
Each division of planetary celestial service is entitled to a liaison corps of these mortals of destiny standing. The average inhabited world employs 70 such core of destiny.
70 separate.
Separate cores of destiny, which are intimately connected with the superhuman current conduct of world affairs. On Urantia, there are 12 reserve cores of destiny, one for each of the planetary groups of seraphic supervision. The 12 groups of Urantia...
Wait a minute, how did we go from 70 to 12?
No, we didn't go from 70 to 12.
But on other worlds, they have
70. The average inhabited world employs 70. It's going to vary all over the place. We don't have any... who knows how many the planetary prince had 500,000 years ago going forward. Or how many Melchizedek receivers had, during all those long years. But, as of the planetary adjudication at Pentecost, we have 12. That's all we know.
Isn't
we don't.
There 12 Melchizedek receivers, and isn't 12
there were.
The number that they keep repeating?
12 is a very popular number, yes.
Michael set this up.
Okay. You know, with the 12. We don't know exactly who picked the Master Seraphim. We don't know all the details here, but.
We know there were 12 apostles and supposedly 12 tribes of Israel.
Which, of course, we know.
12 eggs and a dozen.
We know there actually weren't 12 tribes of Israel.
12 months in a year.
Right.
Each division of planetary celestial service isn't...
You read that, yeah.
The 12 groups of Urantia Destiny reservists are composed of mortal inhabitants of the sphere who have been rehearsed for numerous crucial positions on Earth and are held in readiness to act in possible planetary emergencies. This combined core now consists of 962 persons. The smallest core numbers 41, and the largest 172.
So he's just pausing. So even those ones,
that's a cool
thought, well, how in the world would there be even any reservists in that? Well, what the heck would they be doing? Well, at the very minimum, there's 41.
At least 41.
You know, so like, maybe you decide that number 12 is the one that's, there's at least 41 that are somehow being trained for that.
Yeah.
What kind of emergencies could they
have? Right. Obviously we're not going to answer those questions, but, I just want to make sure that you see all of the unanswered questions that they're invoking here. They want you to really think about this.
And I thought about when I was reading this before a couple days ago about the 962 persons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this book was written like 55 years ago or whatever. So there were 962 persons right then that was consisting of this reservist destiny. So they're probably our age. Around these people. They're probably the baby people.
No. This is a long time ago. They're dead.
No, it's not. Yes. That's what it said.
This was 1930.
We're talking back in 1930 or something.
Okay, well, all right.
And they were adults.
So you're saying they're dead?
They're dead.
That's a bummer. That took my whole...
But how many are there now? How many are there now?
There's more than...
There's more than 962 most likely now.
Because the number is steadily increasing since Pentecost. Pentecost was the low point on both sides.
Mm. Yeah. Good.
Yeah, that group number 12, they really needed a whole bunch.
Okay, and we'll see that as we go forward. See what they say as we go forward.
With the exception of less than a score of contact personalities, that's 20, isn't it?
Yep, that's 20. Less than 20.
The members of this unique group are wholly unconscious of their preparation for possible function in certain planetary crises. These mortal reservists are chosen by the corps to which they are respectively attached and are likewise trained and rehearsed in the deep mind by the combined technique of Thought Adjuster and Seraphic Guardian Ministry. Many times, numerous other celestial personalities participate in this unconscious training, and in all this special preparation, the midwares perform valuable and indispensable services.
Why indispensable? Next paragraph.
On many worlds, the better adapted secondary midway creatures are able to attain varying degrees of contact with the thought adjusters of certain favorably constituted mortals through the skillful penetration of the minds of the latter's indwelling. And it was by just such a fortuitous combination of cosmic adjustments that these revelations were materialized in the English language on Urantia.
Okay, just so that first sentence there, that's the indispensable part. Doesn't matter how many angels and whatnot you have or other celestial personalities involved in this training, they can't whisper in your mind's ear. Only the secondary midwayer can actually get in there and engage. Okay? And they're indispensable to this training process. And how and whatnot, see, there's all kinds of unanswered questions there, but you know, we've talked about this many times, you know, the parenthetical there. You know, this is the key. The self-acting adjuster of the contact personality that was utilized making this happen could be engaged by a secondary midwayer stably because of that cause, you know, didn't they say some sort of cosmic fortuitous combination of cosmic adjustments? One of those fortuitous circumstances was that the contact personality pulled his personality over control very passively away from a region of the mind where the secondary midwayer and the thought adjuster could get in direct contact, so that the divine counselor's paper comes in through the thought adjuster, through the mystery of mysteries, that highly nonlinear high English of the divine counselor gets translated into English that the secondary midwayer can you know, ingest in his mind, and then he can pick up a pen and write it. You know, so the secondary midwayers are very, very critical because they're the only ones that can actually get into the mind. They're the only ones that can actually whisper in someone's mind's ear.
So during the default, the nefarious ones,
right?
That's where the demons
can. Yeah, yeah. If the individual was not of normal mind, you know, they could actually get in there and puppet them.
Yeah. How many secondary midwayers are there? Just 11-11?
No, yeah, 11-11, yep.
Just over 1,000.
And that's why they tell you, the secondary midwayers are just tied to the reservists here, you know, because it's about one-on-one.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. How many primary midwayers?
Well, it's
almost 10,000.
Yeah, almost, yeah. Lots and lots.
The original core was big.
Yeah, 50,000 to start with.
40,000 went into...
Now, one thing to notice, on a lot of worlds, there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 50,000 secondaries, too.
Right.
So it's interesting to note, you know, that we only got, you know, 1,984 to start with. So the original plan for this world involved, you know, the use of the secondary midwayers in a more limited way. Well, coincidentally, we've got this nice little perfect way for them to work with. You have to wonder, what's the chicken and the egg is some of this stuff. See?
Yeah.
How much of a coincidence is it that there's about 1,000 reservists and there's about 1,000 secondary midwayers? Yeah.
Such potential contact mortals of the evolutionary worlds are mobilized in the numerous reserve cores. And it is, to a certain extent, through these small groups of forward-looking personalities that spiritual civilization is advanced, and the Most Highs are able to rule in the kingdoms of men. The men and women of these reserve corps of destiny thus have various degrees of contact with their adjusters through the intervening ministry of the midway creatures. But these same mortals are little known to their fellows, except in those rare social emergencies and spiritual exigencies wherein these reserve personalities function for the prevention of the breakdown of evolutionary culture or the extinction of the light of living truth. On Urantia, these reservists of destiny have seldom been emblazoned on the pages of human history.
Except perhaps in something that's highly suspicious when they say breakdown of evolutionary culture or the extinction of the light of living truth, that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish in the earth. Highly suspicious that that sentence, you know, in the Gettysburg Address is this sentence in the Revelation. That's one of the things that makes Abraham Lincoln so, you know,
especially when you read it,
possible. Yeah, right. Yeah. The more you study how the Gettysburg Address came into existence, the more suspicious you get. But anyway, no proof, but highly suspicious. Just the one thing I wanted to point out there, you know, that self-conscious adjuster, instead of saying self-conscious, instead of self-acting, it's tied to this statement. You know, that so you have a varying degrees of contact with their adjusters through the intervening ministry of the midway creatures. See, but they're pointing out, you know, all the way from even the one that's really, really unconscious, all the way to the very, very conscious contact personality one. Because a self-acting adjuster, you know, by definition, has some separateness. You bring a midwayer in there that bridge, that really intimately fosters a bridge between that, and that individual, even if they're quite unconscious, is likely to get some little inkling that something is going on in the higher mind. Like Winston Churchill, the thing that, in my opinion, makes him the most suspicious is not what we know in most of recorded history, what he did, but it's what he said when he was a little boy. If I remember, he was 8. And he just met all of his friends, you know, that you can still interview today. Said they all remember how he would just very matter-of-factly say, when I grow up, I'm going to save Britain. And they all say, they remember him saying it as if he somehow just knew it. Like he'd heard it. See, that makes it suspect. See, and because of this, you know, because they tell you this, you know, if he was, there, you know, even if he's mostly unconscious, there's a high probability that he might get a little direct inkling because of this fostered contact with that self-acting adjuster. And you would just know that that's what you were going to do. And it also, that would indicate that, you know, if that is the case, if that's not just a rationalization, that would indicate he was fairly mature, even at a very young age. Because remember what they said, they don't engage them until they've reached a requisite level of maturity and stability so that when you engage them, they don't go flying off on a tangent. If he was actually being engaged when he was just a young lad like that, that's an interesting little insight too.
The reservists unconsciously act as conservators of essential planetary information. Many times, upon the death of a reservist, a transfer of certain vital data from the mind of the dying reservist to a young successor is made by liaison of the two thought adjusters. The adjusters undoubtedly function in many other ways unknown to us in connection with these reserve corps.
That's a fascinating one. For a way you might not immediately expect, it's fascinating in a lot of ways. You can see right on his face, but is mind not literal? Okay, think about this. You've got all these celestial personalities that have worked and worked and worked to literally create forms in a mind. It took a lot of work to create a certain form in a reservist mind. So much work that they're not going to start over again. And they're literally going to transfer that mindal energy form to another individual. You know, and again, they're completely unconscious. And it's not like you're transferring memories. You notice it didn't say a transfer of certain vital data from the brain. No, from the mind. It's not memories in the mind, in the brain. It's forms in the mind, literal energy forms. You know, and so it's going, you know, it's kind of like the contact personality thing we were just talking about with the book. You know, it's going from a mind of one into the adjuster, over to another adjuster, and into the other mind. A literal form. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chris, it's almost 9:30. Can we finish the rest of this next week? Because it's so good.
We got to finish it this week. Well, let's keep going. Let's keep going.
The reservists.
On your rancher.
On your rancher, the reserve corps of destiny, though having no permanent head, does have its own permanent councils, which constitute its governing organization. These embrace the Judiciary Council, the Historicity Council,
Historicity
Council, the Council on Political Sovereignty, and many others. From time to time, in accordance with the Corps' organization, titular mortal heads of the whole reserve corps have been commissioned by these permanent councils for specific functions. The tenure of such reservist chiefs is usually a matter of a few hours' duration, being limited to the accomplishment of some specific task at hand.
That's cool.
Very curious little statement. I'll touch on that in just a second.
The Urantia Reserve Corps had its largest membership in the days of the Adamites and Dandites. Steadily declining with the dilution of the violet blood, and reaching its low point around the time of Pentecost, since which time Reserve Corps membership has steadily increased.
Okay. That's the end, really the end, of the section on the Destiny Reservists. All that's left is a footnote and an epilogue to the paper. Okay. And the footnote is a zinger. That's the next paragraph.
And this is in parentheses.
Oh, you've read it.
I cheated.
The Cosmic Reserve Corps of Universe Conscious Citizens on Urantia now numbers over 1,000 mortals whose insight of cosmic citizenship far transcends the sphere of their terrestrial abode. But I am forbidden to reveal the real nature of the function of this unique group of living human beings.
Now, we've talked about that many, 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 many times. I just want to point out one thing. You have the less than 1,000 reservists. You've got the more than 1,000 cosmic reservists. See, it's just a footnote. So you're done with talking about reservists, like I said. It's a footnote to that. It's like, oh, and by the way, there also are the cosmic reservists. And when you think about, you know, a human being titular head of the whole reserve corps for a short period of time, you know, you're thinking of, well, is that like one of the reservists who gets really conscious of things for, you know, a few hours? Well, maybe not. Maybe it's one of these cosmic reservists that serves. Because, see, they're going to be involved in all of these divisions, 12 divisions of the angels, too. Let that ruminate in your mind is another point to think about with those mysterious cosmic reservists.
So they're over all 12 divisions.
Right, see, they're going to, you know, and so it gives all those 12 divisions human hands if they need them. You know, with no reservist falderall. I mean, they're directly part of the planetary government. Well, these cosmic reservists.
So they'd have to have a cosmic perspective. They couldn't have these detailed perspectives like the reservists
right,
have.
See.
And that's an interesting choice of words. Special. It's insight of cosmic citizenship, right. not knowledge of facts.
Yeah, but it just, you know that they're going to be very tangential in their language from what he says at the end. I'm pushing it to the limits to even say this. So I'm probably more, it's going to be more confusing than clarifying what I have said. Because if it's clarifying, I'm in violation of the revelatory mandate. keep that in mind when you try to interpret that sentence. It's just this interesting little footnote.
Okay,
so there you have the reservists. Now let's just read the epilogue, and we'll read it straight through. Because this is the way they always do it. I just want to make sure everyone recognizes. The idea is to read this through and to see how they're trying to take all these details, sometimes scary ones, that they've given you, and they want to bring it home and make it soar with some poetry.
Your ancient mortals should not allow the comparative spiritual isolation of their world from certain of the local universe circuits to produce a feeling of cosmic desertion or planetary orphanage. There is operative on the planet a very definite and effective superhuman supervision of world affairs and human destinies. But it is true that you can have, at best, only a meager idea of an ideal planetary government. Since the early times of the planetary prince, Urantia has suffered from the miscarriage of the divine plan of world growth and racial development. The loyal, inhabited worlds of Satania are not governed as is Urantia. Nevertheless, compared with the other isolated worlds, your planetary governments have not been so inferior. Only one or two worlds may be said to be worse, and a few may be slightly better, but the majority are on a plane of equality with you.
Remember, there's 36 others.
No one in the local universe seems to know when the unsettled status of the planetary administration will terminate. The Nebadon Melchizedeks are inclined to the opinion that little change will occur in the planetary government and administration until Michael's second personal arrival on Urantia. Undoubtedly at this time, if not before, sweeping changes will be effected in planetary management. But as to the nature of such modifications of world administration, no one seems to be able even to conjecture. There is no precedent for such an episode in all the history of the inhabited worlds of the universe of Nebadon. Among the many things difficult to understand concerning the future government of Urantia, a prominent one is the location on the planet of a circuit and divisional headquarters of the archangels. Your isolated world is not forgotten in the councils of the universe. Urantia is not a cosmic orphan, stigmatized by sin and shut away from divine watch care by rebellion. From Uversa to Salvington, and on down to Gerasim, even in Havona and on Paradise, they all know we are here, and you mortals now dwelling on Urantia are just as lovingly cherished and just as faithfully watched over as if the sphere had never been betrayed by a faithless planetary prince. Even more so, it is eternally true, the Father himself loves you.
Presented
by the Chief of Seraphim stationed on Urantia.
Father himself loves you. That's from John's Gospel. There's no intermediary, like we were emphasizing back a little bit when it was starting to feel a little scary. Father himself loves you. Yeah, loves you. There's nothing to fear. And it's interesting that they, the juxtaposition of those two paragraphs. Yeah, it's mostly poetic, but there's a couple of little allusions there. Like when they use the word sweeping changes will be affected in planetary management. Like we were talking about that last week. Yeah, it'd be pretty sweeping if there was some really direct literalness to angels of trumpets. Right. But like they say, no one can really say for certain about any of this. But sweeping is a distinct possibility anyway. Archangels are not known for their fuzziness. We all know that when you read the archangel paper about the celestial artisans, it's all prickly. And he calls you pond scum several times. You want to keep, just under the subtext there, but then immediately giving you a really solid poetic passage. They want you to face facts and adjust them to ideals. Yeah, and it's in that order, those two paragraphs. They really want you to awaken to a much wiser, more objective perspective. And don't you love that? This is a primary Supernafim, way beyond us and whatnot. And what does he say? They all know we are here. We. Yeah. He sees himself as one of us.
Yeah.
We are here. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It is.
So there we have it. Those two little papers, you know, that function as a as an interesting little group among into the, unto themselves.
Yeah.
The two sides of the angels, the mother side and the father side. Everyone needs to take a deep breath and get ready because we jump into the deep end again next week. they're not gonna take us, you know, without a lot of brain twisting complexity into the Supreme. They start off pretty aggressively right at the beginning of the next paper. So be ready to you know, to really you know, eat a little bit bigger dinner, you know, before next week. Yeah. Because you're going to need the caloric potential trying to process what they're going to give us. I mean, it's so wham-bam that they basically don't even give you a preface if you look to the next paper. It's just right into it. So that's where we'll start next time. Let's take a little moment here.